You wanna sort of go with, can ask.
Not in particular, really. I've been watching all your archive videos from about October up, trying to catch up. Been listening to a few things by Ian Clayton, but I really haven't been a student of his. I just kind of learned on my own. In 2010, everything started changing for me, and really what you guys are helping me do is put language to what I've experienced. And I've seen a lot of things and not really understand everything I'm seeing. Some of the things the Lord says to me, this is where you are. You guys call it by a different name, but it's the same thing. So I'm just learning.
No,
Number three.
absolutely. We're all learning. It's a pretty steep learning curve, but and I think the language is difficult, sometimes. I'm sort of working on pulling together a glossary of terms that could try and just, where, because people have been to the same place and then they call it this room or that room, and they're all the same place, actually, the way they experienced it, that the impression that it was called this, and it's fine because it's all multiversed in heaven. There's no space, and we know it in the same way, so we can all be in the same place and not see each other, and sometimes we can be in the same place and see each other, and it just depends on what's going on. But I do think glossary and terminology is something that can be confusing until you sort of tune into it. Someone commented on one of the videos, "I've been a spirit-filled, born-again Christian for so many years, and I've got no idea what you're talking about." Because I thought, what are these scrolls, and what are these courts, and what is this and that? And so you think, well, yeah, it's all in the Bible, but you just didn't recognize it as being something that was something that we could access and attain. So that creates a problem for someone. And obviously I forget, some people, because we're just hanging out and we're using the same language, and we've been doing these things for a while now, you sort of forget anyone listening that sometimes it's just like you go to some technical conferences and things, and they use language that you just don't understand. They understand it, it's perfectly okay, but you don't understand it, particularly when people use acronyms. It's like, and they think you know what they're saying, and they're just using an acronym, and you've got no idea what they're talking about. And so we try and be careful to help people to tune into the language by expressing it in a way that makes sense, I guess, for people.
Well, you do a good job of that. You really help. So I appreciate that.
Well, I try. Sometimes I don't succeed, particularly because you're talking like this all the time, you just sort of, it just becomes so normal and natural, to talk about a mandate. Someone the other day, "What do you mean a mandate?" First of all, it's just an authorization to do something. Like Jesus got what he saw the Father doing, and that authorized him to do something. You can go and get an authorization to do it that gets recognized by the angelic realm. But sort of mandates are just not something that is a familiar term to a lot of people. And other than in the technical side, if people understand what it is, but it's words like that that, I think are words that are godly, but it's just people need to, we need to explain or have a way of people understanding a lot. So it's great. Your
One
experience.
area that I'm sorry. Just one area that I am searching out right now and trying to get some understanding on is the order of Melchizedek. I know a lot of people have talked about that, and I understand some of it. In fact, I'm, studied in Hebrews and gone back in the Old Testament and about his encounter with Abraham and all those things. But I haven't encountered him in heaven, stepping in. I know You know, you guys say he's the chancellor over the treasury room and all those things, but I don't have a real good understanding of, you know, it says Jesus Christ was after the order of Melchizedek as a high priest, and therefore I believe we're supposed to pattern, you know, on earth this new order that's coming. And I know Ian calls it that, the order of Melchizedek, this other order of apostleship and the prophetic. And so I'm open to all that. I just don't understand a lot about it yet. So I'm trying to learn.
I think it can be quite complicated if you make it complicated. And I think when Ian is looking to press into a new realm and he's beginning to share things that he's on the edge of or that are new, then he starts using different language and, you know, he starts, you know, coming with a whole different dimension of things. And it can become confusing, you know, because I know the last set of conferences that he's done in the US and different places, that's been the key. You know, so he's brought out, you know, a set of teaching, the Order of Melchizedek 1, and now is an Order of Melchizedek 2. And, you know, and some of it, you know, I think he received some of that revelation directly, but also I think, you know, I think he's been engaged with this guy from Venice in California, Dr. O, who they have sort of this whole Hebrew perspective of the letters and the meanings and that stuff. And to be honest, that just leaves me cold. You know, I just want to go and meet God and what's going on and start doing it. You know, I'm not really bothered whether the word Melchizedek is made up of 15 Hebrew letters and they say this or that. When I hear someone say it, oh, that's interesting, great. For me, that's not where I am. I just want to encounter and learn the protocols and find out what is it I'm supposed to be doing in this order. What is it about? You know, so, you know, Ian will go into great depth, and I understand that because you're on the edge of something and you're pushing into something new. For me, I think it's really, I find it quite a straightforward thing. For me, the Order of Melchizedek is the same as the Joshua generation, the Joshua company. Basically, it's those that are going to embrace a supernatural lifestyle of their promises and their inheritance. You know, and that means that they need no genealogy, because the Order of Melchizedek had no genealogy, which means that we are going to be transformed and purified and refined so that we get rid of all the junk within spirit, soul, and body in that sense, or certainly soul and body, and in terms of the understanding how our spirit is growing. And, you know, that for me is the key. It's a process. You can't become Order of Melchizedek just by, oh, I want to be. You have to be in that transformation process of getting rid of the rubbish so that we can be entrusted with a new level of governmental authority to administer the four faces of God on the earth, and coming out of the four faces of God perspective of the kingly, prophetic, apostolic, and priestly, and bringing a unity in those of government and opening up heaven to come to earth with a window of bringing that together. And I think, you know, it is after the Order of Melchizedek that, as you said, you know, Melchizedek himself has got very little to do with it. He's a chancellor of the courts of the treasury, you know, and in reality, yes, you need to engage in that order to have the resources to release from heaven and administer. And that's what it really is about. It's administering the resources of God from heaven to earth through that order. And it is a new order in that it's not the fivefold ministry order. And that is obviously going to create a bit of a challenge for people to let go of some of that. And I'm not saying all of the fivefold ministry things are wrong, because I've been operating in this apostolic gift and stuff for a long time, but it's how that old order created a dependence on people to be the apostle, to be the prophet, to be the pastor, to be the teacher. We sort of put people on pedestals and they become God, so they do it for us rather than equipping us to do it. they do it. So why need the word from the prophet? Well, no, the prophet's supposed to teach you to go to God and get the word for yourself, not give you the word all the time, so you become dependent on him. Well, I need a plan from God. Well, I'm going to go to the apostle. Well, no, he's supposed to actually tell you how you can go to God and get a plan for your day or for your life or your week or whatever. And I think some of it's become big business in ministry, and there is a danger that those people won't be prepared to let it go and step in across into the new. And, you know, the Moses generation had miracles, signs and wonders, supernatural provision, amazing things for 40 years, and yet they all died in the wilderness. And there was only Joshua and Caleb who carried a good report of the promises to come, and I believe that is crossing over into a supernatural heavenly dimension of government rather than just earthly government, that they were able to go in and take a generation with them, you know. And so Moses didn't go in, even though he did great miracles. But you notice it was always Moses who did the miracles. You know, Moses hit the rock. Moses did this. Moses did that. And I think that's the pattern that God is wanting us to let go of, so that actually, no, we go and we get God to tell us what to do, and we do it. And all of us are now responsible. We've all got a responsibility to administer the kingdom through our lives, and to administer government, and to establish dominion around us and in the spheres that we've been given. So I feel, you know, we're in that place right now where, you know, this is a very sort of popular term, but let's simplify it. You know, let's simplify it and get it down to what it really means. It means us ministering the resources of heaven in a new order and way, which means is operating out of the kingdom perspective, doing it in heaven first, you know, and that's really what it's about. You know, it's done and releasing heaven's resource to earth, not operating earthly resource. Even though it may be anointed and very powerful, it's not the order that God wants us to establish things in. You know, Jesus made it clear, you know, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And so the order of Melchizedek are engaging as it is in heaven from a judicial kingdom governmental standpoint to release that onto the earth. You know, and I think that's really where I think the issues are, really. And I think, yes, there's lots you can look into Melchizedek and you can sort of whole lot of stuff, but let's go back to the basics. A holy people of God standing in righteousness in the realms of heaven, administering the kingdom from a heavenly perspective to transform earth. That's good enough to get your teeth stuck into, in the sense, and go for. You know, I'm not saying that it won't become clearer. You know, I have a clear understanding of it, but you know, I think we can simplify it so that we can embrace it. Because what we don't want to do is get into an elitist thing of, okay, and I know Ian is sort of, well, it's probably only 10% of the people who are going to be willing to pay the cost to be the order of Melchizedek, you know, and reality is, well, that might be true, but let's not see that as something to be proud about. It's like, it's about God, not us. You know, and it's about responding to the call that he's given us, not about us being anything in our own right. You know, it's him. It's about him. Let's focus on him. Let's make sure that it doesn't become a negative thing, because there is a danger. Yeah, I'm going to be part of the order of Melchizedek, and then we treat everyone else as if they're second-class citizens. You know, we must treat people with honor, even if we don't agree with them. You know, even if they're resisting what God is doing in these days, we must treat them with honor and respect. You know, Joshua never treated Moses with disrespect. He was honored up to his death. You know, and we need to have that level of maturity that even though great ministries may not go this way, we still honor them for what they've done, because they were some of the stepping stones to get us where we are today. You know, I've been blessed by so many different ministries, you know, and I pray and hope that those people are going to embrace this new way of in ministering the kingdom and step into it, and that'll be awesome. If they don't, I'm still going to honor them. And even if they disagree and criticize and accuse me of doing this, that, the other, I'm still going to honor them because I want to demonstrate a culture of honor, and I want to bless those that have gone before. You know, in the 40 years that the new generation arose, they needed the old generation to protect them and to encourage them, and Moses was there. But then that new generation entered in, and they were given responsibility. You know, they had to mature. You know, the wilderness really is an immature place, but God does it all for us. Once we get over into the land, now we've got to do it for ourselves with his government, not independent of him, just administering the things of heaven. You know, so it's, you know, it is a, I know, a very popular subject. And I know, you know, I've seen some of the stuff that's been put on Facebook, and it's like, you know, reams and reams and reams, sort of 7, 8, 9 part series is on the order of Melchizedek. I've looked at it and think, yeah, this is really good, but we need to get a simple thing that people can just get hold of and say, hey, I want to embrace that. You know, I want to administer the resources of heaven. And to be honest, it's like, Melchizedek was only one of the chief chancellors. You know, there's another 11 of them that were a whole different understanding of kingdom government that we haven't even embraced yet. So, you know, this is just the first of coming into a different realm of legislative authority in the kingdom, and, you know, transforming things. But it's great. You know, I'm not knocking it. I want to see that. Whether you call it a Joshua generation or the order of Melchizedek, I want to see that raised up into the fullness of who they're called to be, and operating in that full authority and power, which is where I'm certainly at the minute, is part of that. So, yeah. Hiya, Tariq. How you doing?
Hi, Mike.
Hiya, okay.
Yes, all right, fine. Thanks for having me. Welcome back. Thanks for having me called.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else anyone wants to ask? Or?
Yeah, could you tell me a little bit about owning or conquering a mountain and slaying dragons and getting the jewels?
Yeah, sure. Well, in an understanding of mountains, obviously you're talking about symbols of authority, of realms of government. My perspective is, you know, when I first encountered it, I first encountered our church mountains. And that I was, you know, I didn't know anything about mountains. I was just taken up into the realms, and I saw all these mountains, and I saw what was going on them, and I saw things around them, and I saw all that stuff. You know, I didn't have any idea what they were, you know. But I looked and I wrote it down, and I went, then I said, okay, what are these? So I went back, and then I learned to see what was on them, and I began to see there were things on those mountains that needed to be got rid of. So, you know, on some of our mountains, there were some giants, there were some dragons around them, there were some sort of things that looked like ogres, I don't know, they were pretty ugly looking things anyway. And I'm like, what on earth are these? You know, because at that point, I didn't really have any understanding of this stuff. I just experienced it, saw it, and it was like faced with, what do I do? And so those were my first experiences of sort of mountains per se. Then when I suddenly realized that I have personal mountains, and I've got 7 personal mountains, I began to explore what they were. I sort of, you know, again, you know, it's like, you know, when Satan took Jesus to the highest point of the kingdom, he showed him all the kingdoms, all the realms of government. So he was showing him all the mountains of government that there were. And so, you know, there is a high point in the realm of the kingdom of God that is where our real mountain is. And real mountain, it's who I really am in positional authority in heaven. And it represents me, and my spirit in me is a mountain. And so when I realized that clarified the whole thing for me, because I found that there is an angel who has been assigned to me and to that mountain to caretake it till I'm ready to mature to enough to sit on the throne that's there. And so I eventually got to sit on that throne, and I was invested with by Jesus with authority, given a scepter and a crown and a mantle as symbols of what I could do there in lordship. And that then enabled me to then govern the other mountains that were underneath that. Because to start with, I was trying to jump from one mountain to another mountain. How do I do this? It's just, it got so complicated. I didn't know where I was. You know, how can I administer kingdom government when I'm having to go from one place to another? But, you know, it's like in Lord of the Rings, you know, one ring rules them all. And actually, our one mountain enables us to rule all the mountains that we're called to function from. And so I found that when I was established there, I began to see from that perspective, and I was looking at the different mountains, and then I began to see the structures that the enemy had built in my life and in sort of our church spheres that had created an opportunity for him to cause blockages and hindrances to me ruling effectively. And what I saw was everything comes down to a system of worship. Satan desired worship. The creatures that are fallen angels or the order of dragons, giants, they desire worship. And so anything we do to worship them gives them authority to establish blockages on our mountains to hinder us and stop us ruling effectively. And so when I began to recognize that, I looked at it more closely and I saw there was like a temple structure with two pillars. One pillar was fear, and the other pillar was another thing. Pride could be one, unforgiveness could be another one. There was different ones on our church mountains that contributed to the enemy's activity. Now, as people down here operate in fear, they're worshipping the devil, basically, a demon. They don't realize that, but actually that's what we're doing, because we're putting more trust in the fear or the potential rather than faith in God that he will look after us and provide for us and bless us and protect us and all the things. So that gives the enemy such a big access, because what you fear can come upon you. So there's always this area where how do you deal with the things? You have to deal with them in two realms, because if you try and deal with a dragon or a giant in the realm of heaven, you don't deal what is fueling or empowering him in this realm, you just keep going chasing your tail, because you'll get rid of a dragon, but you'll just re-empower it because you're still operating in fear or pride or whatever it is that empowers him in the first place. So when you recognize that they're there, identify why they have authority to be there. Once you recognize that, then you can remove that authority by not cooperating in this realm, and you can deal with them in that realm, and then that's problem solved. But when you recognize them and you've done that, and you go to discipline them or get rid of them, you need to do it basically from the perspective of coming from above. That's why it's important to be on your mountain that is ruling those mountains, because that means you can come from a perspective of confidence, knowing who you are, your spiritual identity, the name that you've been given by God, all those things. Because when it comes to dealing with a dragon, their biggest form of weapon is intimidation and backlash. So, you know, they have a tail, and they breathe fire, sort of thing. So they try and intimidate us from going up against them. And when I've heard people testimony, I went up against this dragon, it was so big, I couldn't deal with it, you know, and the reality is, no, that's just the impression that you're getting because you don't know the authority over it. And what I found is when God leads you into dealing with these things, you'll find that he's spoken to you about something, or he's given you a particular scripture or a particular encounter that reaffirms your authority over that area. And so then when you go up against it, you are coming from a higher perspective. You just then you can come down and you can just deal with it. But if you're standing looking up at it and it's huge, it's really hard. But what I've found when people have done that, scriptures have come to them like using the sword of the Spirit as the word of God, and each time they professed or declared or spoke out of that which was in their spirit, it's like this thing got smaller or they got bigger. You know, it's this thing getting smaller because actually it just appears to be large. You know, so then each slice that they took like brought it down to size, and then it was like, ah, this thing's no bigger than me. In fact, it's smaller than me. I can deal with it. And so then in chopping off its head, what you're doing symbolically is removing its government or authority over your sphere. So you're basically saying, you do not have a right to rule here. So I'm removing your government. Your head is coming off. You know, and yeah, you can symbolically chop the tail off, say, look, there's going to be no way in which you can whip out at me anymore. Having done that, then what the reality is, them being on that throne, they have been a blockage, or they've robbed you of kingdom authority there and the resources that are yours to administer from that realm. And so when you open them up and split open their bellies, often things come out which are about your sphere of godly influence there, your kingdom authority. Sometimes there are gems or jewels or things. Sometimes there are coins. Sometimes I've had people have shoes come out, umbrellas come out, all sorts of things. And you think, well, what on earth are they about? But you have to find out what is the symbolic nature of the things that you see, because they'll usually have a meaning. You know, one guy I was leading in an encounter, and we went into this thing, and he opened this thing. He says, oh, I can see all these shoes. You know, so I said, well, what do you think shoes mean? Well, I don't know. I said, well, do you think it might mean that in Ephesians 6, you know, we're going to be shod with, you know, the feet of the good news, you know, to bring the truth to people? Oh, right. So I said, has God ever spoken to you about bringing people into freedom and bringing people into truth and equipping them in that? Oh, yeah. So that's why you've got many shoes. If it was one pair of shoes, it was probably about you having ministry. Because there was lots of shoes, it was about you going to be equipping lots of people in this area. So, you know, what you see is just finding out what is it actually saying. And then what you can do with those things, people do different things. You know, and I've done lots of different things as I've been directed by the Spirit. Some people just take them inside themselves. So they take those things, and it's like, no, they are now part of me. They're my resource. That means that within me, they can flow out of me. Some people will go and trade them. And it's like, yeah, all this stuff, I just want more. You know, personally, I've never really felt to do that, because actually these were given as my resources. So I will want to go and give them away. You know, other than if I want to trade them for something more. But I've never particularly felt the need to do that. You know, what I normally trade with is things that are, you know, things that are given to me as praise or thanks or whatever. I want to take them and bring it all, because it's all about Jesus and not about me. But if I have a resource, then I want to use that resource to the best of my ability. So in a sense, I have also sometimes taken something, planted it in my own garden, because the angel that was on my throne told me to do it. You know, and that was a powerful thing, because it grew up into something and produced a couple of silver trumpets on this tree in my garden, which had great significance in what I was called to do in the next in the season that was to come. You know, so all sorts of things can take place. But the key is knowing our authority and using that authority to defeat the enemy from above. You know, and so if they're flying, you know, I will come down on above on the top of them and take their head off. You know, and they soon stop flying. You know, so it depends. Sometimes the way you see them, are they sat on your mountain? Are they or are they flying around it? Because if they're not on it, they can just be intimidating you, trying to block what you're doing on the mountain and stop it going any further. So the symbolic nature of it is quite important. But whatever you see, or get the impression of, then it's just learning to do it from above. But it is fun, you know, in a sense. It's like once you really recognize your authority, you know, and I've got rid of them all now, so it's like I haven't got any more to deal with. Although sometimes when I get called to go to a new place or a new region, you know, I get permission sometimes and authorized to help people deal with their dragons. And there's particularly, I found in going to places that there's often a white dragon that's flying over a region or an area to do with religious tradition that's really trying to block people coming into the revelation that God's releasing. And this it's a very sort of dominant religious thing, pretending, of course, they're white because they're tending to be good, whereas there are no good dragons. You know, we don't train our dragon, we slay it, you know. And, you know, because you get these things come out in these cartoons, you know, how to train your dragon. Well, what is it sowing into people? Well, dragons are good things and they're useful. Well, no, they're not. You know, there are no useful dragons. We just need to slay them and make sure that they're not hindering us and operating in any negative way. So, is that helpful? Yeah. Okay.
So, Mike, are you saying, help me understand?
Yeah.
Yeah, you slay a dragon, cut off its head. Somehow it can come back if, like, you enter into fear or something like that, or does another dragon pop up?
Well, in a sense, what you're doing is if you do not deal with why the dragon had authority to be there in the first place, you'll struggle to slay it because you won't be operating in full authority. If you do symbolically slay it and you continue to reinforce, you just give authority for another one to pop up. There's loads of them, you know. So, I mean, someone asked me the other day, you know, well, when you kill them, are they dead? Well, they're spirits. They're actually not dead. Because spirits go on forever, don't they, in one place or another. So they're not actually dead, but you're removing their authority over you. It's like what happens when you cast a demon out of someone or you get a demon cast out of yourself. Well, if you don't deal with the empty house and fill it, it says it will go and get seven worse and come back and reoccupy it, and it will be worse than it was in the first place, which is why I don't deliver people who aren't Christians unless I'm really clear that God is going to save them and they get filled with the Spirit, because you don't want them to get worse. You know. And those people who aren't serious about change and just want someone to cast a demon out of them because it's easy and they don't have to do anything, they won't get lasting freedom unless they change their thinking and their speech and their behavior and everything else to go with it. So, in a sense, it's like you're just reauthorizing authority if you continue to give them authority. Whether it's the same one or a different one, I don't know. I mean, personally, I haven't had any of them come back, so I couldn't actually say, but I know some people who have, right? You know, and sometimes, you know, they do try to intimidate. You know, I was working with a guy in looking to help him deal with some of these things, and he said he dealt with one, and then he said he saw seven dragons just circling around. Well, of course, he got all fearful, and then they recognized that, and they tried to intimidate him in dealing with the ones that were on his next thrones. But, you know, we got together and we sort of worked that through. So then it was like, okay, let's deal with all seven of them then. You know, and they as soon as we made that declaration, the things just flew off. Because they actually really haven't got any authority other than what you give them. You know, the devil has no authority whatsoever in himself other than what's being given to him by people. And so if we give him no authority, he has no authority. So it's in agreement that authority comes. So if we are frightened and are fearful of dealing with it, then they have authority. If we're confident, in our authority in God, then they don't. And you know, dragon slaying actually is quite easy when you know your authority. It's not difficult. You know, I think people think, you know, you're mad talking about dragons and things like that. But, you know, it's all biblical. Jesus in Revelation talked about the old dragon, you know, Satan. So, but, you know, it is all about government. That's the key.
So if there's one dragon, there's got to be other dragons.
It depends. It depends really on what happens in your life. You know, if you've done a lot of work in your own life, if there's been a lot of healing in a healing ministry, and you've had deliverance, and you've cleared away a lot of things in your lives, you know, not every one of my mountains had a dragon on it. Because I'd already really removed authority. I just didn't know what I was doing in that realm. But what I did here removed the authority that was operating in that realm already. You know, so there's no guarantee that every mountain has got a dragon on it. You just got to go and see and look, you know. And when you go and rule from that perspective, you begin to look around what is around my mountain. You know, what I'm seeing from the perspective of this mountain, are there things that are just flying around the distance, or actually can I get a clear perspective of the sphere of government around my life, because I'm looking from that heavenly perspective into this realm, you know, so I can begin to picture and pattern and see what's going on, you know. So I don't, you know, I don't think there has to be a dragon on every mountain. If there is, we deal with it, you know, and sometimes there are more than one. You know, depending on what that sphere of king authority is, and how we you know, have to do. And sometimes, you know, the enemy will always try and intimidate and try and fool us. You know, and if he can deceive us into thinking he has more authority than he has, then that's what he'll do. You know, so.
Well, you know, I didn't know that when you slayed in the beginning of all this, when I started with the Ian Clayton Facebook site, yeah. I didn't know that after you slayed a dragon that you get a mountain, then you name it, and then you find the name, you get to name this mountain or whatever it is, and I didn't know you got a throne and a crown and a scepter and angels and a mandate, and I didn't know all of that until I learned it from you. And so I recorded all of these different, for the dragons that were slain, they were different colors.
Yeah.
So I just assumed that was the color of the mountain, like one was green or emerald, so I have an emerald mountain. But I didn't know at the time that you could actually put, like, a name on it, like, it's a healing mountain, just say. Yeah. But I know that to seek it out, to ask the Lord. So now, what do I do? Do I go back and visit those places again, take Jesus with me, or ask him, or what is it that I do to know the names of these mountains? Or are they the names of ministry that I'm doing already?
They may well be. I mean, when you're enthroned on your mountain, the mountain that really represents you and your identity in God, then you can then look at those mountains and begin to, as you get, ask God, what is the name of that mountain? And that can come from your spirit, in that your destiny will know what the name of the mountain is, because it will be part of your destiny. So your scroll will have the names of that mountain on there somewhere. You can go and ask God directly. You can be on that mountain and looking at it and just see what begins to be creatively released. You know, it's lots of different ways. I don't think there's any one way. And people do. It's like, you know, when you think, oh yeah, I have an emerald mountain, you know, I think some people are more creative and they engage that way. I just sit on a throne. I'm not even bothered what it looks like. I'm bothered what I do from there. So I that's just how I am. I'm more interested in the governmental or place of the mountain, but it can be ministry. I mean, there can be lots of things. I mean, you know, I've in my own personal world, I've obviously got family, a family mountain. You know, I have a prophetic mountain, apostolic mountain. So they are very much tied to ministry because that's what my whole life's about, in a sense. But you can have a healing mountain. You know, I've known someone who's had a regional mountain. They've had a mountain of body, soul, and spirit. One of their mountains was called body, one was called soul, one was called spirit. And I said, well, okay, what do you think you're going to do on that then? You know, and so I encouraged them to go to that mountain and to begin to engage, what does that mean? What does it mean? Well, it meant that he was ruling over his own life. That was the first aspect for him. He ruled over his own life, and he did it from that perspective of the mountain. So he, and as he was taking that authority, he began to work through the gateways of his life, and he began to rule as he did it. That was just how he did it. That guy also had a church mountain, you know, because he was, at that point, he didn't know what that meant. Now I'm helping him plant a church because he's starting from this perspective and outworking it. So, you know, it will come in many different ways, I think. Sometimes you just know. You look at it and you just know what it is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it might be the color or the appearance. Probably for those who are more sort of intuitive, creative, probably that's what they may look at it and actually see something that represents something. For me, I just go and ask, or I just know. And, you know, the first time I saw the church mountains, I was told. An angel took me up into the atmosphere through it and into this realm, and I'm looking at these mountains, and he basically just told me, this is the mountains. And there were five of them at the time, because that's all I could see. But then subsequently, there I found two more that were hidden within one of the others, and they had to be birthed and released. You know, so we have seven. But then underneath those seven churches, there's also seven others that are associated with each, because we have a healing mountain, a health mountain, but actually there are different aspects of healing and health that are actually part of the kingdom government that we have to administer. So, you know, I'm not allowed to go onto those mountains because they're not my realm. Frustrating as that is at times. So I'm having to equip and raise up others to go on that mountain and find out what the others are and call those people to belong. I just support them and help them in the process, you know. But when it comes down to it, it is about government. And if you don't govern from that sphere, then it's not much point having a mountain. You know, it's like I can be sat there with my feet up and doing nothing. Well, that's, there isn't much point. You know, if I'm on a healing mountain, what am I supposed to do from there? Do I release that and birth that as a river? Because some people have rivers flowing there from their mountains that are flowing down. And that can flow through our own heart and out in the world around us, as well as the river of life. There can be things flowing from our mountains. I was engaging with a guy the other day who was on a mountain. Last time I saw him, he had a crown, and I saw him with a crown. I said it has 12 different colored stones in the crown, and he was on his mountain with this crown, and God gave him a stone, a red stone in his hand, a red and a blue one, actually. And he was like, what do I do with it? Well, his spirit told him to put it in the river that was flowing from his mountain, and the river turned red and began to flow. You know, well, it was like, well, what did that mean? So I said, well, what has God been speaking to you about recently? And it was like, okay. And then he said, oh, yeah, this. I said, well, how do you think that relates to this red stone and a flow of a red river? And he saw it. He saw the connection, and then he understood what he did. And then that gave him a way of administering authority. because it came out of the 12 stones that are in the crown. You know, that's another whole topic. But you know, that's for me how I engage with it, and you know, I think people will find their own way. But you need to know what they are, you know, and then we need to rule from our mountain, and in using the other spheres to administer. I don't go onto my family mountain. I rule from it, from above, and it flows through that administrative function of it. You know, otherwise you have to split yourself in seven ways to try and keep it all. It's like when I first did it, it was like spinning plates. You know, trying to keep plates spinning. How do I do this on this mountain? How do I do this on that mountain? Because I just didn't know. You know, but once I was established on the mountain, if you like, now I can administer everything from there. Mm-hmm. And so it's much easier.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right about that, administering from the mountain. Because I didn't give up, but I kind of just put it the other things on a shelf. And just ruled from the place where I was seated in with Christ, and just started there and used that as a foundation for when I'm ready to go to the other mountains, because I was like all over the place, just grappling for stuff. And finally, when I recognized what I was doing, then I decided just to frame my world around that seat where Christ seated me in from Ephesians 2:6. And it made life so easy and so peaceful and so restful. And that is a place of rest, a seat of rest.
The seat of rest for us, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, government isn't about frantically trying to do something and keep everything under control. Government is actually knowing your authority as a lord, if you're in lordship in there, and just administering that lordship from a total place of rest and peace and confidence, because we know the authority we've been given. You know, and then, you know, I then let that flow to and through the different spheres that I have government over. Now, you know, I mean, I've got so many different mountains in terms of authority. In terms of I'm on three benches of three, and it's like, you know, I'm in all sorts of different spheres, but I rule them from my mountain, and that mountain has access to be in the realm of the kingdom of God in lordship, but also I've been invested with higher authority into the realm of the kingdom of heaven in terms of kingship, you know, and you know, I have also engaged in a higher throne in the realm of heaven, which is next to the river of fire and things. So, but I administer exactly the same way. I just carry different legislative authority now, you know, and that means that cascades down through everything. You know, it's not like, oh, I can operate in lordship down here, but kingship up here. I operate in kingship, which means now all these things are coming under kingship, mm-hmm. which just gives you a different dimension of being able to legislate things. But you know, I had to learn how to do that, and wisdom taught me how to do it. Mostly, I engage with wisdom on the heights a lot in this process. You know, and still do when I'm sort of, you know, I've got another whole field I need to go into to understand the 12 chancellors' houses and things. I'm going to engage with wisdom in that process. You know, because that's what she's there for. To help me rule and understand legislative authority, so I go there and look into her and engage with her quite a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
You mentioned wisdom. With wisdom, because I didn't have a full understanding of the courts, I had not known that she brought me into the courts of the fathers until I had listened to Ian's teaching on the courts from Company of Burning Hearts. Yeah. And I've been focusing lately on the courts just because I want to get some kind of a foundation and even recognize what is going out in the spirit. She took me to a foyer, and in there was Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, some of the prophets, Elijah, Elisha, Jeremiah, Isaiah, and there were a few others. I recognized Miss Kuhlman and Ruth and Esther. And I thought, according to Proverbs 9, she was just throwing a dinner party for me. And we went, we sat at her table, it was beautiful, and they all sat around the table, and there was a lot of talking going on, and Jesus was there too. And I thought about Melchizedek, and I thought, where is he? And then he comes walking in, and the Lord told me, he's here for you. Well, the table expanded enough for him to sit down. And then the Lord, after a while, said to me, he has something for you. And he got up, and the Lord told me to get up, so I did. And he and I are face to face. And I saw behind him a portal open, and he had a treasure. And immediately I thought, I'm going to trade this, because I trade everything. And everything that I get in heaven or whatever, I trade it. And Jesus said, no, the Father does not want you to trade this. This is for you. And so I knew what to do with it, and I put it in my belly.
Yeah.
And I know what it's for. You know, take it back to earth. I know what it's for in the earth, but it just hasn't manifested yet. However, now I'm listening to Ian's teachings on the courts, and I think it's the court of the fathers.
Yeah, court of the council of the fathers, yeah.
Yes, and he said in there that the fathers are there in this court, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and people like Melchizedek. So then from that teaching that he did, I understood where I was a month ago. You see what I'm saying? And I think if we have a springboard in which to jump off or some kind of a foundation, maybe when we're seeing these things in the spirit, we could recognize them. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But part of my frustration is, yeah, I go in the spirit, yeah, we see. However, a lot of times I'm not understanding what I see because I don't have the foundation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, I think it's an interesting issue. Would you rather see something you don't understand or know something that you do?
And both,
honestly. But if I had to choose, I'd rather know something than just see something and not know what it meant. So in the encounters, I'm looking for my spirit to engage in the revelation knowledge of the encounter and its purpose. And so I want a knowing of what it's about. Now, because of the sort of multiverse nature of heaven and how God interacts with us, we can all have different experiences of something which may be a similar named place. See, my experience in the court of the Council of the Fathers was totally different from that. But that doesn't mean that that was wrong or your experience was wrong, because your experience was important for you to receive something that God wanted you to get hold of. And so had this encounter that opened you up for the revelation to receive that and place it within you, which is the main thing. Because you weren't operating there in judicial authority. You had an encounter that God used to move you forward or give you something or to reveal something to you. There's a big difference when you go into a court and you're going in governmental authority to administer something. So, you know, when I first saw the court of the Council of the Fathers, wisdom wouldn't let me go in. Just I saw what it looked like from the outside, the door and everything, but I couldn't go in. And I was sort of like, this is a bit off. Why can't I go in? You know? But I knew because I didn't have something that I needed. So in an encounter not long afterwards, I was given a seal. And I was given this seal around my neck as a Chancellor's seal. So then I thought, and I think these sort of things, is that what gives me access? So I went back to Wisdom, and I then went into the court of the Councils of the Fathers, having been on the Firestones and having been engaged in the different precepts and ordinances and the things of the kingdom in terms of protocols of government. So when I go into the court of the Council of the Fathers, there's the Father on his throne, like I've never seen him before. You know, I've met with the Father in his garden and had a great time in there. You know, I've seen God on the throne, because God is represented of Father, Son, and Spirit on the throne, in a sense, in one way. But he was different. I knew this was the Father. But there were 12 that I saw as like elders. You could call them fathers. And 12 on one side and 12 on the other. And so it was very much, okay, are these the 24 elders? What are they representing? So that's where I begin to engage my spirit to know things. So, you know, and I began to appreciate what it was that I was being brought here for. And as I was brought there before it, I began to appreciate that which would be seen as the 12 laws that come out of Jerusalem and the 12 laws that come out of Zion. Now, I did that because I engaged my spirit in the revelation of the encounter. Now, sometimes that will come through a person like Wisdom, but I will sense that she's with me, so I'll turn and ask her. And I will get a flow of revelation that comes from her, like she's speaking to me. Now, sometimes I'm not looking at her speak to me. I'm aware and I'm connecting. So there'll be a flow. Sometimes it's just I'm engaging with the revelation of it, and I just know that I know what it is. My spirit is engaged. So I was aware that having connected with this Chancellor's Seal, having connected with the Firestones and the different ordinances, I was aware what I was being encouraged to pursue in understanding the 12 laws that come out of God's Mountain Zion, which are kingdom protocols of rulership. So, and that was it. I was there. Wow. Okay. Now I'm going to go back to Wisdom and see, okay, do I learn about these things? So she took me to the 12 Chancellor's houses, and they're large, sort of, all I could see are the doors. They're big doors. And so I could see where each one of them was. And I got introduced to the Chief Chancellor of each house. So I now know the name of the Chancellor. The only one I'd been to previously was the Treasury Room. So I was aware of Melchizedek, and I knew Melchizedek, so I recognized him. But the others, I didn't, you know. Now I have to go back and engage with them and to understand the protocol that I was being made aware of. You know? Well, that's going to take a bit of, you know. And my spirit will lead me to go back when I need to go back. You know, you don't have to rush. You know, it's right now, it's a desire that's been placed in my heart. I know it's part of my destiny to engage these things, but actually I'm really, really busy right now in doing things and preparing some stuff. So there's no rush, but I know when my spirit knows it's time, then I'll go back and engage, and then I will find what the protocols are and what that means, and so that I can pass that information on to others. You know, so you know, it is a process that we go through. Not all encounters are governmental in our encounter in a court. Some of them are encounters that open up a realm or give us revelation of something. And you just need to be discerning, really, about what it is. You know, is this encounter something that was just for me, or am I learning about the actual function of the court, how it works? And it's different, because God does all sorts of things. You know, I've been to different courts, and there have been different things going on at different times. you know, and I've engaged in them differently. But then that's God. You know, this whole thing is multi-dimensional, and there's levels and levels and levels. You know, when I first went on the Firestones, I had an amazing encounter that I thought I could never, ever get anything deeper than that. I've been back subsequently and found that that was just the first level, and I've looked in deeper, and there's been deeper levels, and I'm sure there's even deeper levels. You know, I could never have possibly even contained that the first time. Second, when I went back several times, you know, it's like my mind cannot contain it, but my spirit is receiving it. And that is what then, when I connect with things associated with it, that's why my spirit knows things. Because it's been encoded with things by the light and the frequency and the fragrance and the sound and all the stuff that comes out of those stones. There's an encoding that takes place that is not cognitive, but does inform and direct and guide from my spirit as I go forward. So, you know, so, yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I mean, I've probably got time for one more question if anyone wants to. We probably haven't got time for an activation now, but if there's anything else anyone wants to ask, I've got a few minutes before I need to go. Or we can leave it there, so. Okay. All right, okay, well, we'll...